Welcome back, everybody. Today, instead of doing our day in history, we're going to focus on a very specific event that happened on this day in history. And of course, I'm talking about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Anybody who was alive at that moment will remember where they were. So we're going to talk to a number of people about that moment in their lives and what that meant. And then we're going to talk to a whole group of people here about the reflections on that day and what it means for society today, where they've come to, especially in terms of the world they live in. So here first is a montage of the voices reflecting on where they were at that moment, that tragic moment in our history. Dr. Freeman Hrabowski, president of UMBC.
You know, there's several things I immediately think about. Number one, I was a 10th grader. I was a little younger than my classmates. I was 13, and I was sitting in a social studies class, in fact, and when we got the news. But remember, Birmingham was still in the after period of the bombing of the church, the march, and all of that, and we were all somewhat tentative. It was all worried about what the future was going to be, and quite frankly, one major source of hope was the president, that the president had showed an interest in what happened in Birmingham, what happened to Negro children, and he was seen and people around him as people who were going to make a difference. And so while we were still feeling some sense of uncertainty about whether or not there'd be other bombs or things of that kind, we'd begun again right after that September tragedy to begin to get back to some level of being normal, of the way the world was. And the way the world was, quite frankly, was it was all black or all white. And and it was in that social studies class where we had been talking about things in our country that all of a sudden we got this message that was the worst possible news, that this man we saw as such a hero and somebody who cared about all children had been killed.
Dr. Carla Hayden, who is CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library.
I was in grammar school in Chicago, in St. Edmunds, and it was a Friday morning, and that we had had our regular going to mass because we were right, the school was right next to the chapel. And so it was a little bit in the afternoon, and we saw, you know how it is with kids, and when you realize that the adults are upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, right,
you know,
right,
that,
right.
That kind of gets you. You know, you're like, what's going on? And they're standing in the hall, or someone comes into the classroom. And then what really struck all of us, I think, was that we had to go back into the chapel, and there were a lot of prayers. Father Martin led us in prayers. And that was just so unusual for us. You know, we knew something bad had happened.
Michael Olesker, noted author and journalist.
I was on my way to a phys ed lecture that was required for all freshmen at the University of Maryland in College Park. I was walking through Coalfield House. I got to class. I heard a couple of classmates talking about a shooting, Kennedy, and it just seemed incomprehensible that the two would be connected. And then it was just early reports. Nobody knew how bad it was. And then the instructor walked into the class. His name was Fluke. And he stood there and in the most sneering tone of voice said, I've got a lecture to deliver. Everybody just sit there. And when I'm done, then you can find out whether or not the president did.
Good Lord.
Good Lord. And we sat there like sheep when we should have punched the hell out of him. We sat there like sheep because this was really our last moment of innocence. We had been raised to respect authority figures. He was an authority figure. It was a much more innocent time. And this, in my mind, has always been the last moment of the 1950s. This was the beginning now of the 60s, a much more combative and convulsive era in America, and it began with the killing of John Kennedy.
Dr. Richard Vatz, professor at Towson University.
I was in high school, and when I heard about it, for the first and only time in my life, I almost fainted. I mean, I dropped to my knee because I was about to black out, and then
really?
then it kind of came to. I don't know if I actually lost consciousness. But I believe I have never fainted since, and I never fainted before that. It was
what was it?
It was that I think in high school you believe that people are immortal, even though there's plenty of evidence that they're not. And when you
right.
and you hear that a young president, and we all love Kennedy, and I could not believe it had happened, that in just a split second a person who was young and vibrant was dead. And I was just enraged that that somebody could just with a bullet and probably with no good reason whatsoever, which I later found out was I was correct, would just take the life of a duly elected person. It never occurred to me this would happen. There hadn't been any assassinations in my lifetime. And then, of course, this was followed in a couple of years by the assassination of his brother and Martin Luther King and others.
Donald Hicken, head of the theater department at the Baltimore School for the Arts.
I was a college freshman. I was on campus at where I went to undergraduate school, McMurray College in Jacksonville, Illinois. So I was way out the Midwest. And I remember, you know, it's one of those things everybody remembers where they were when they heard it. I was actually on my way to this like little student cafe called The Hub, where everybody, you know, it was like a little sandwich place on campus where everybody kind of hung out before we got our student union building built. Anyway, I was on my way there. I saw some people coming up the steps. It was an underneath basement facility, and they were coming up the steps, and one of the girls, there were two women, and one was crying, and I thought, it didn't know what to think of something, and then the other woman turned to me and said that the president's been shot. I remember thinking, you know, it seemed like such an impossible thing at the time. You know, I mean, you heard obviously of the assassinations of presidents, but never expected anything like that to happen in my lifetime, and certainly not to someone who seemed so popular and so charismatic and so remarkable in so many ways. You know, he was this great sign of sort of hope and revelation and rejuvenation, all of that. And then so it just seemed impossible to me. In fact, I think my first reaction was I didn't believe that was what was really going on. I almost laughed because I thought it was a joke, you know, that she was actually masking for this girl who was crying over some guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I proceeded into the hub. This is a cafe area, which was usually a very bustling place, and it was dead silent. I mean, there were lots of people in there, and you couldn't hear it. Nobody was speaking. And then there were some people who were, you know, had just come down from the lounge area above. It was in the basement of a dormitory, and they'd come down from the dormitory lounge, and they said, it's on TV, and blah, blah, blah. So a bunch of us went and watched.
Steve Elliott, producer-director, who teaches film editing at NYU.
It was an unusually warm day, and we were up in Stockbridge, Massachusetts at the Stockbridge School. I just remember how warm it was that day, and we were planning right after lunch to play the faculty in the student-faculty soccer game. I was in my room, and I was putting on my sneakers when somebody came running down the hall saying that Kennedy had been shot, and I just thought they were messing with me, you know, or messing with everybody, until I got out the front door of the boys' dorm, and I saw that something definitely had gone on, because everybody was down the soccer field. It was very somber. Stephen Hubbard, who was an Englishman and our science teacher, was ranting. It was just, he was in his soccer shorts. He was an older guy, gray hair. He was just talking about how insane Americans were kicking the soccer ball. I was stunned. I think if you talk to enough people, everybody was. Some people broke down in tears, but I think I was one of those people who were just too stunned to cry. And my girlfriend, who is now my wife, Molly, and I took a walk down to what was known as the Stockbridge Bowl, Lake Mackinac, which was just below the school. It was warm enough we didn't need coats. I just remember sitting there with her, just trying to take it all in.
Taylor Branch, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Parting the Waters.
It was quite memorable. I was sitting in a small office at my high school. I was a senior in high school, and I was sitting in a small office with I think he was a major from the U.S. Army who was the recruiter for football from West Point. And we were talking about whether or not I wanted to go play football at West Point. I knew I didn't, but I was curious about first of all, it got me out of class, and second of all, I was curious about how they would pitch a career in the Army at that time. This is pre-Vietnam. It's very innocent. And the secretary stuck her head, because we had secretaries back in those days, stuck her head in the office and said, "Excuse me, the president has been shot in Dallas." And the recruiter, who was in full Army uniform, stood up and didn't say a word and stood up and saluted, because the woman who poked her head in clearly was in shock. I mean, it was not a neutral announcement. It unnerved him, or his reflex was to stand up and salute. And he held this salute for what seemed like an eternity. He didn't know what to do. And then he finally said, "Well, I guess we'll have to take this up another time." I was shocked. I wanted to run and find a television. To my school's credit, there weren't very many televisions. It was hard to find one. So people basically, classes let out, and people were wandering around listening to things, finding the teachers who had radios. Selfishly, however, I will say that in the midst of all the shock of a young kid, the president being shot, we were scheduled to play that night, my high school football team, for the championship of North Georgia in the toughest division. And our big worry was our game going to be postponed or not? And it was. We didn't play Friday night. We played Saturday night. That was my last high school football game. I separated my shoulder in the second quarter, sat out, and was in a lot of pain, taking painkillers on Sunday morning when I watched Jack Ruby shoot Lee Harvey Oswald on live television.
Mm.
It was memorable, but it was innocent. It was all wrapped up in where you're going to go to college and high school football, and I'm sure that I'm not unusual. I bet we watched 15 to 20 hours of television over that weekend, the news and seeing Walter Cronkite be so emotional, and right on through the funeral and the little pictures that are now icons of John Kennedy saluting the caisson right. with his father on it, not really knowing what was going on. I remember it as like the end of innocence at a time when I was 16.
Dr. Freeman Hrabowski, president of UMBC. But 13 in the 10th grade, so I'm and so obviously you were a little bit ahead of yourself. So I'm curious, as a 13-year-old in that situation, what was going on with you personally? You were a kid who was involved as one of the young people in Birmingham in the civil rights movement, being arrested as a child. This president is killed. So
right.
What was the young Freeman Hrabowski going through at that moment?
Keep in mind, because I have older parents who were, my father was much older when I was born, was over 40, and mother late 30. So I'd always been in a home where we talked about ideas, and they treated me like just a thinker. So I was
right. Right.
So I was different in the sense that I was accustomed to talking about ideas with adults, which sometimes in the South people had not done with their kids. At the same time, I looked around the classroom, and there were two sets of reactions. There were kids who were just numb because they were confused. They didn't know how this was possible. But the children who had gone to the march with me, who had gone to jail, were absolutely stunned. The girls started crying, the boys. I mean, those of us who had been in that, really in the civil rights movement, who had seen the role that the federal government, the role that President Kennedy had played, were more than just stunned. We were, for the moment, absolutely filled with not just grief, but the girls were just, it was as if a parent had died. It was just awful, because we saw him as the hope. We saw him as the one who would make sure people did the right thing, that we'd finally get better schools and be treated as first-class Americans. He was seen as our future. And all of a sudden, it looked as if there was no hope. It looked, and the question that came to me at that time was, can life be any worse, and will it get any better? You know, and I'll tell you what I thought about that. It's really strange. I thought about his kids. I just remember so well just thinking, oh, God, what happens to children when a father is killed? You know, and it was just so depressing. It really was. It was just an awful moment. But I also remember my teacher taking the time, even in that period, to use it as a moment to get us to reflect on history. And I remember so well her talking about Abraham Lincoln and that period when none of us had been born, of course, and how these kinds of things sometimes happen to people who get out in front to say the truth. And she allowed us to just talk about what we were experiencing. And that was the moment. That was, I mean, everybody who was alive, you know, most Americans were not alive, but for those of us who were alive, this was as awful as we could imagine.
In some senses, given your parents and given what you were involved in, given the teacher you had in that place, you weren't actually, you were in a lucky place at that moment, just to be able to do the kind of reflection that you might not have had a chance to do otherwise.
There was such a difference. There were kids who had not been involved in the civil rights movement who really did not believe things were going to change anyway, and they had their own reaction, which was really one of sadness too. But they really hadn't had hope anyway. The kids who had been in the march and who had just spent that time in jail reflecting on the possibilities, we were the ones who had a lot of hope. We really, and it was because it was this powerful guy, the most powerful person in the world, who cared about all children. We thought, if they can kill him, my God, what is it? If they can kill little girls in church, and then people can have such hatred they can kill our president, well, what kind of world do we have? What can the future be? So it was a time, quite frankly, even as the teacher tried to get us to reflect on history, it was a period of tragedy and of hopelessness.
No, I just realized what you were saying, Freeman, because you were just a couple of months before had experienced the Birmingham bombing.
Oh, God. We had those children, those 12-year-old and 14-year-old girls blown to pieces in church. Mm. So we were already raw. We were already, I mean, it was, we had seen just how devastating hatred could be. We had just begun to, that's what I'm saying, So we in Birmingham were with such mixed emotions, hope on the one side, fear on the other, not knowing what price one pays for freedom, the freedom to do just basic things. And, you know, when I think back on it, for a period after that some wonderful teachers took time to go through history and to talk about what happens when there's that kind of tragedy and how, I'll never forget, her saying something, Mrs. Goree was her name, and she said, times like these that families and even a nation will come to know just what's most important to them. And she said, as a Negro teacher, I believe we are better than this. I'll never forget that. Mm. I believe we're better than this. And you, talking to the kids in the class, you will help us to be better than this. It was powerful.
Very powerful moment. Finally, Freeman, I'm curious, as the president of the university, as someone as a scholar and works with young people, what does all this mean today, do you think, for those young people, even if it's unconscious in some sense? How does it affect the young people you're around?
You know, I just by chance coming in today, there were these children from the third grade of a school in the region with kids of all races. And I mean, the first thought I had when I stopped and I saw these about 35, 40 little babies, little children, I mean, of all races. And I stopped. I enjoy so much talking to children. And I stopped to talk, and I looked into their faces, and I saw such hope. And the first thought I had was, my God, Dr. King, President Kennedy, so many people died so these children could learn what it means to study together and to be prepared to live as citizens, as true citizens in our country. And so I think it's so important that children and young people and people who were not born in 1960, had not been born in 1963, that they understand this history, that they understand the sacrifices that people made, that president was willing to stand up for people different from himself and to say things that were not popular among certain parts of the country particularly, and that it ended by his life being taken. And it should not simply depress people. I think we should be inspired by what all of those events led to, because we could not have thought that President Johnson would have been as transformational a leader as he was.
Right.
We could not have thought that. You know, I remember my mother and father having just major debates around the dining room table about who to vote for. I mean, it was so interesting. And the reason my father and my mother just voted for President Kennedy. My dad liked President Kennedy, but he didn't vote for President Kennedy. He voted Republican because, quite frankly, he was worried about the Texan becoming president. He assumed certain things. I mean, you know, and they had this conversation. And so over that next period, we saw a man of the South Lyndon Johnson rise to be an American responsible for and caring about children and people of all races for many reasons, a lot of complications. But the point is, if it had not been for the tragedy of President Kennedy and the ascendancy of President Johnson and Johnson's connections to southern states and his brilliance, all those things coming together, I would never have seen those children this morning of all races coming from the same classroom. So that we have made progress in our country. But what I say to my students at UMBC is, but there's so much more progress we need, because so many children are still not learning to read, and large numbers of children are still in poverty. And that's, you know, I go back all the way to FDR when he says, I mean, we really can measure who we are by what we do for those who have so little.
Dr. Carla Hayden, so you were very young, but did you get right. a sense of what the import of that moment meant?
Yes, yes. And a lot of it had to do with the adults' reactions. See, that was what was really something. You knew that this was very serious, and they to see a teacher crying, or to see and to have Father Martin lead us back into that chapel and to have the solemn prayers and things like that, you knew that this was pretty important. And then by the time your parents, you know, after school, and you were, some schools were let out early. And so this just that fact alone was something. And then to get home and then the news coverage, because we weren't allowed to watch, you didn't watch television as much then. And so
right. The
television was on all of the time after that, all through the weekend. And then that Sunday, television on live, you're watching the thing and you see the killing of Oswald.
Right.
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 As it happened. I mean,
right.
That had never happened. So that was just so startling to see. And then there's such an unease of, my goodness, what's going on?
I mean, that did really change, I mean, young people's feelings in that day, just because it was just so, such an explosive moment for kids, I think.
Right, and to see it live.
Live,
you know,
exactly.
That was something. We weren't used to that. And television, we weren't watching television quite the way we were. Or we are now. And then to see how many books, we estimate there are at least 50 to 100 books that have been written about the assassination and all the events surrounding it, much less all of the books that, in addition to all of the books about JFK and Jackie Kennedy and all of that. So.
And
it really, there aren't that many. I think Lincoln and is the only other president that's had as many books written about him.
So you were saying to me earlier about the power of these books that in the library, and people really, these are one of the most popular things people are pulling out right now.
Yes, yes. And they had started several months ago. And so now the demand is so great, so the from the e-books to the print books. And some people really want the older books about the assassination, because there's a feeling that some of those accounts and things were more contemporary and truer, because they were closer to the event. So that's been interesting, that there's a call on some of the older books as well.
Dr. Richard Vatz, what do you think that the assassination did, not just to the generation, but to this country and to us since? I mean, what kind of lasting effect has it had on the psyche of just the consciousness of this country?
I think that most people who are adults never think anything is permanent anymore. It doesn't mean that we would have thought things were permanent years going forward, but I, when a youthful president, a good man, can just be killed by an individual who just simply wanted to kill him for, and we won't go into why he claims he killed him, but it leaves a certain impermanence, and you have impermanence and you have change, and you believe that nothing is guaranteed anymore. And I do think that the Kennedy assassination, more than anything else in my lifetime, proved to me that nothing is permanent.
To hear the complete story by our guests today, all of them, Dr. Freeman Hrabowski, Dr. Carla Hayden, Michael Lesker, Dr. Richard Vatz, Donald Hickens, Steve Elliott, and Taylor Branch, please go to our website at steinershow.org. They'll all be there, their entire interviews and reflections on this very important day. Thank you for joining us for this segment. We'll be right back.